bags from their bags. Approaching us in a purposeful and insinuating manner, wriggling their buttocks, they passed around little clay pipes. Hashish. Very good. When it came to my turn to smoke, it caused me to cough greatly, but soon I felt a lifting of my spirits and a vividness of pictures in my mind, together with a pric cling in my groin and buttocks. Drums and flutes appeared and the boys began to dance, and as they danced stripped off their clothes until they were dancing stark naked on the brightly colored silk scarves and dresses strewn about the deck. Captain Strobe stood on the poop deck playing a silver flute, the notes seeming to fall from a distant star. Only Mr. Thomas, at Strobe's side, seemed totally unconcerned, and for a second his bulky form was transparent before my eyes, probably an illusion produced by the drug. Mr. Thomas was watching the siren through his telescope. Finally, having received a signal that their sails were set, he gave the order to hoist sail on the Great White. Surprisingly enough, we were able to carry out the order with no difficulty, the effect of hashish being such that one can shift easily from one activity to another. Kelly gave the same order in an unknown tongue to the dancing boys, who now acted in a seamanlike manner, some naked, some with scarfs twisted around their hips, as they went about their duties singing strange songs. So sails were speedily set and we got underway, for where I did not know. Some of the boys have hammocks and sleep on deck, but we are often two to a bunk in the forecastle. Since we now have a double crew, there is much time with nothing to do, and I have been able to acquaint myself to some extent with the strange history of these transvestite boys. Some of them are dancing boys from Morocco, others from Tripoli, Madagascar, and Central Africa. There are a few from India and the East Indies who have served on pirate vessels in the Red Sea, where they preyed on merchant vessels and other pirates alike, the method of operation being this: some would join the crew of a ship, selling their favors and insinuating themselves into key positions. Then the crew sights an apparently unarmed vessel carrying a cargo of beautiful women, all singing and dancing lewdly and promising the mariners their bodies. Once on board, the women pull out hidden pistols and cutlasses, while their accomplices on shipboard do the same, and the siren now uncovers its cannons so that the ship would often be taken without the loss of a single life. Often the boys would sign on as cooks, at which trade they all excel, and then drug the entire crew. However, word of their operations spread rapidly and they are now fleeing from pirates and naval patrols alike, having, as the French say, brûlé burnt down the Red Sea area. Kelly told me his story. He started his career as a merchant seaman. In the course of an argument he killed the quartermaster, for which he was tried and sentenced to hang. His ship at that time was in the harbor of Tangier. The sentence was carried out in the marketplace, but some pirates who were present cut him down, carried him to their ship, and revived him. It was thought that a man who had been hanged and brought back to life would not only bring luck to their venture but also ensure protection against the fate from which he had been rescued. While he was still insensible, the pirates rubbed red ink into the hemp marks, so that he seemed to have a red rope always around his neck. The pirate ship was commanded by Skipper Nordenhals, a renegade from the Dutch Navy who was still able to pass his ship as an honest merchant vessel flying the Dutch flag. Strobe was second in command. Barely had they left Tangier, headed for the Red Sea via the Cape of Good Hope, when a mutiny broke out. The crew was in disagreement as to the destination, being minded to head for the West Indies. They had also conceived a contempt for Strobe as an effeminate dandy. After he had killed five of the ringleaders, they were forced to revise this opinion. The mutinous crew was then put ashore and a crew of acrobats and dancing boys taken on, since Nordenhals had already devised a way in which they could be put to use. Kelly claims to have learned the secrets of death on the gallows, which gives him invincible skill as a swordsman and such sexual prowess that no man or woman can resist him, with the exception of Captain Strobe, whom he regards as more than human. Voici ma lettre de marque, he says, running his fingers along the rope mark. A letter of marque was issued to privateers by their government, authorizing them to prey on enemy vessels in the capacity of accredited combatants, and thus distinguishing them from common pirates. Such a letter often, but by no means always, saved the bearer from the gallows. Kelly tells me that the mere sight of his hemp marks instills in adversaries a weakness and terror equal to the apparition of death himself. I asked Kelly what it feels like to be hanged. At first I was sensible of very great pain due to the weight of my body and felt my spirits in a strange commotion violently pressed upwards. After they reached my head, I saw a bright blaze of light which seemed to go out at my eyes with a flash. Then I lost all sense of pain. But after I was cut down, I felt such intolerable pain from the prickings and shootings as my blood and spirits returned that I wished those who cut me down could have been hanged. Asterisk. Asterisk Daniel P. Mannix, The History of Torture, New York, Dell, 1964. The reader may question how I find time to write this account on a sea voyage in a crowded forecastle. The answer is that I made very short notes each day, with the intent of expanding them later. I now have 2 hours of leisure each day to reconstruct a narrative from these notes, since Strobe has placed a desk and writing material at my disposal, being interested for some reason in printing my account. Each evening all the boys strip and wash in buckets of salt water, whereupon various sexual games and contests take place. In one such game each boy places a gold piece on the deck, and the first to ejaculate wins the gold. There are also contests for distance. Since there is plenty of powder and shot on board, there have been a few contests with pistols and muskets. I have won some gold, being careful not to best Kelly, though I am sure I could have done so. I feel that he could prove a most dangerous enemy. There is much here that I do not understand. Are you in salt? Back in New York I call the greens from my loft. I put $5,000 worth of security into this space, the windows are shatterproof glass with rolling bars. The door is 2 inches of solid steel from an old bank vault. It gives you a safe feeling, like being in Switzerland. Mr. Green can see me right away. He gives an address on Spring Street. Middle class loft, big modern kitchen. Siamese cat, plants. Mrs. Green is a beautiful woman, red hair, green eyes, a faraway dreamy look. I notice journeys out of the body, psychic discoveries behind the Iron Curtain, the Castaneda books. Mr. Green mixes me a Chivas Regal. I clarify my position, private. Investigator, no authority to make an arrest. I can only pass evidence along to the local police, frankly, in this case I can't hold out much hope of obtaining an arrest, let alone a conviction. We still want to retain you. Why, exactly? We want to know the truth, said Mrs. Green. Whether the killers can be brought to trial or not. I pull out the questionnaire with Jerry's medical history. It says here that Jerry had scarlet fever at the age of 4. Yes. We were living in St. Louis at the time, said Mrs. Green. Who was the doctor? Old Dr. Greenbaum. He lived next door. Is he still alive? No, he died 10 years ago. And he made the diagnosis? Yes. Would you say that he was a competent diagnostician? Not really, said Mr. Green. But why is this important? Jerry apparently had an attack of scarlet fever or something similar shortly before he was killed. I turned to Mrs. Green. Do you remember the details? How the illness started? Why, yes. It was a Thursday and he had taken a ride with an English governess we had them. When he got back he was shivering and feverish and he had a rash. I thought it was measles and called Dr. Greenbaum. He said it wasn't a measles rash, that it was probably a light case of scarlet fever. He prescribed oreomycin and the fever went away in a few days. Was Jerry delirious at any time during this illness? Yes, as a matter of fact he was. He seemed quite frightened and talked about animals in the wall. Do you remember what animals, Mrs. Green? He mentioned a giraffe and a kangaroo. Do you remember anything else? Yes, she said after a pause. There was a strange smell in the room, sort of a musky smell, like a zoo. Did Dr. Greenbaum comment on this odor? No, I think he had a cold at the time. Did you notice it, Mr. Green? Well, yes, it was on the sheets and blankets when we sent them to the cleaners. Exactly how was Jerry killed, Mr. Snide? A massive overdose of heroin. He wasn't. No, he wasn't an addict, and the Greek police are convinced the heroin was not self-administered. Do you have any idea why he would have been murdered? I'm not at all sure, Mr. Green. It could have been a case of mistaken identity. When I got to the office the next day, my assistant, Jim Brady, was already there, having come straight from the airport. He is very slim, 6 feet, 135 pounds, black Irish. Actually, he is 28, but he looks 18, and often has to show his ID card to be served in a bar. He handed me a packet from Athens, a photograph, and a message from Dimitri typed on yellow paper in telegraph style, have found villa where Jerry Green was killed, stop on. Mainland 40 miles from Athens, stop head still missing. Stop villa rented through London travel agency, stop false. Name stop. Dimitri. The photo showed a bare high ceiling room with exposed beams. There was a heavy iron lantern hook in one beam. Dimitri had circled this hook in white ink and had written under it, traces of rope fiber. A Mr. Everson called, said Jim. His son is missing. I made an appointment. Where is he missing? In Mexico. A Mayan archaeologist. Missing 6 weeks. I sent Mr. Everson the questionnaire and asked him for pictures of the boy. Good. I had no special feeling about this case, but it was taking me in the direction I wanted to go. Back at the loft, we decided to try some sex magic. According to psychic dogma, sex itself is incidental and should be subordinated to the intent of the ritual. But I don't believe in rules. What happens, happens. The altar is set up for an Egyptian rite timed for sunset, which is in 10 minutes. It is a slab of white marble about 3 feet square. We mark out the cardinal points. A hyacinth in a pot for earth, north. A red candle for fire, south. An alabaster bowl of water for water, east. A glyph in gold on white parchment for air, west. We then put up the glyphs for the rite, in gold on white parchment, on the west wall, since this is the sundown rite and we are facing west. Also, we place on the altar a bowl of water, a bowl of milk, an incense burner, some rose essence, and a sprig of mint. All set, we strip down to sky clothes and we are both stiff before we can get our clothes off. I pick up an ivory wand and draw a circle around our bodies while we both intone translations of the rite, reading from the glyphs on the wall. Let the shining ones not have power over me. Jim reads it like the Catholic litany and we are both laughing. I have purified myself. We dip water from the bowl and touch our foreheads. I have anointed myself with the unguents. We dip the special ointment out of an alabaster jar, touching foreheads, insides of the wrists, and the base of the spine, since the rite will have a sexual climax. I bring to you perfume and incense. We add more incense, a few drops of rose oil, and a pinch of benzoin to the burner. We pay homage to the four cardinal points as we invoke Set instead of Cantamantiu, since this is in some sense a black ritual. It is now exactly the hour of sunset, and we pay homage to Tem, since, Ra, in his setting, takes that name. We make lust rations with water and milk to the cardinal points, dipping a mint sprig into the bowls as we invoke the shining elementals. It is time now for the ritual climax, in which the gods possess our bodies and the magical incantation is projected in the moment of orgasm and visualized as an outpouring of liquid gold. My phallus is that of Amsu. I bend over and Jim rubs the ointment up my ass and slides his cock in. A roaring sound in my ears as pictures and tapes swirl in my brain. Shadowy figures rise beyond the candlelight, the goddess Nintab, patroness of those who hang themselves, a vista of gallows and burning cities from Bosch. Set. Osiris. Smell of the sea. Jerry hanging naked from the beam. A sweet rotten red musky metal smell swirls round our bodies, palpable as a haze, and as I start to ejaculate, the room gets lighter. At first I think the candles have flared up, and then I see Jerry standing there naked, his body radiating light. There is a skeleton grin on his face, which fades to the enigmatic smile on the statues of archaic Greek youths, and then he changes into Dimitri, with a quizzical amused expression. So we send the shining ones home and go to bed. Why do you think the head was cut off? Asks Jim. Obvious reason, to obscure the cause of death in case the body was found. But they didn't figure on the body being found. There was some special purpose they had in mind, to use both the head and the body. Drawings of transplanted monkey heads flash in front of my eyes. Where do you think the head is now? In New York. Horse haddock. To ride. Next day when we got to the office there was a telegram from Dimitri, have suspect in custody who witnessed death of Jerry Green. Stop wire if wish to interview suspect. We took the next plane to Athens and checked into the Hilton. Dimitri sent a car for us. Jim was a bit stiff when they shook hands in Dimitri's air-conditioned office. Wall-to-wall blue carpet, a desk, leather-covered chairs, a picture of the Parthenon on the wall, everything neat and impersonal as a room in the Hilton. Dimitri raised one eyebrow. I infer you disapprove of our politics, Mr. Brady. For myself, I disapprove of any politics. Please understand that I stand to gain nothing from this investigation. My political superiors want the whole thing dropped, a few degenerate foreigners, it's bad for the tourist business. Jim blushed sulkily and looked at his shoes and turned one foot sideways. What about this witness you got? I asked. Dimitri leaned back in his chair behind the desk and put the tips of his fingers together. Ah yes, Adam North, the perfect witness. Survived his perfection because he was in custody. On the morning that the Green Boy was killed, September 18th, young North was arrested with a quarter ounce of heroin in his possession. When I saw the laboratory report, I ordered him placed in isolation. The heroin he had been buying from street pushers was about 10%. This was almost 100%. It would have killed him in a matter of seconds. Well, if they would kill him to shut him up about something, why let him know about it in the first place? Jim asked. A searching question. You see, he was a sort of camera from which a film could be withdrawn and developed. But first the bare bones, later the meat. Adam North had been approached by someone fitting. Dimitri glanced at me. Your description of Marty Bloom, and offered a quarter ounce of heroin plus $1,000 bonus to be paid in two installments to witness a magical ritual involving a simulated execution. He was suspicious. Dimitri turned on a tape recorder. Why me? Said a stupid surly young voice. It went on. Sought his character from a comic strip says I am a perfect. A perfect what? I ask him. A perfect witness, he tells me. He has 5 C notes in his hand. Well, all right, I say. But there is a condition, he says. You must promise to refrain from heroin or any other drug for 3 days prior to the ceremony. You have to be in a pure condition. Promise on my scout's honor, I told him, and he lays the bread on me. But one more thing, he says. He gives me a color picture of a kid with red hair who looks sorta like me. This is the subject. You will concentrate on this picture for the next 3 days. So I tell him sure and split. And would you believe it, with 500 cools in my pocket I can't score for shit nowhere no way. So when the chauffeur comes to pick me up in a Daimler I am sick as a dog. Dimitri shuts off the tape recorder. He was driven to a villa outside Athens where he witnessed a bizarre ceremony culminating in the hanging of the Green Boy. Back in Athens he was given the quarter ounce of heroin. He was on his way back to his girlfriend's apartment when the arrest was made. It still doesn't make any sense, Jim said. They drag him in as a witness, God knows why. Then knock him to shut him up. They did not intend to shut him up. They intended to open him and extract the film. Adam North was a perfect witness. He is Jerry's age, born on the same day, and resembles him enough to be a twin brother. You are acquainted with the symptoms of heroin withdrawal, the painful intensity of impressions, light fever, spontaneous orgasms, a sensitized film. And a heroin overdose is the easiest of deaths, so the pictures registered on the sensitized withdrawal film come off without distortion in a heroin OD. I see, said Jim. It's all here on the tape, but I think you would like to see this boy. He is, I should tell you, retarded. As we are going down in the elevator, Dimitri continued. There is reason to suspect a latent psychosis, masked by his addiction. Is he receiving any medication? I asked. Yes, methadone, orally. I don't want his disorder to surface here. You mean that he could become a public charge? I asked. More than that, he could become a sanitary hazard. We saw Adam North in one of the interrogation rooms, under fluorescent lights. A table, a tape recorder, four chairs. He was a handsome blonde kid with green eyes. The resemblance to Jerry was remarkable. However, while Jerry was described as very bright and quick, this boy had a slack, vacuous, stupid look about him, sleepy and sullen like a lizard resentfully aroused from hibernation. Dimitri explained that we were investigators hired by Jerry's family, and we had a few questions. The boy looked down at the table in front of him and said nothing. This man who offered you the quarter ounce of H. You'd seen him before? I asked. Yeah. When I first came here, he steered me to a score. I figure he is creaming off a percentage. What did he look like? Gray face, pock marks, stocky medium build, fancy purple vest and watch chain. Like he stepped out of the 1890s. Didn't seem to feel the heat. Anything else? Funny smell about him, like something rotten in a refrigerator. Please describe the ritual you witnessed, I said. Allow me, interrupted Dimitri. He looked at the boy and said, Ganymede. And snapped his fingers. The boy shivered and closed his eyes, breathing deeply. When he spoke, his voice was altered beyond recognition. I had the impression he was translating the words from another tongue, a language of giggles and turkey gobbles and coos and purrs and whimpers and trills. Ganymede Hotel, shutters closed, naked on the bed. Jerry's picture. It's coming alive, gets me hot to look at it. I know he's in a room just like this. Waiting, there's a smell in the room, his smell. I can smell what's going to happen, naked with animal masks, demon masks. I'm naked but I don't have a mask. We are standing on a stage, translucent noose, it's squirming like a snake. Jerry is led in naked by a twin sister, can't hardly tell them apart. There's a red haze over everything, and the smell the kid whimpered and squirmed and rubbed his crotch. She's tying his hands behind him with a red scarf, she's got the noose around his neck. It's growing into him, his cock is coming up and he gets red all over right down to his toenails. We call it a red on. Adam giggled. The platform falls out from under him and he's hanging there kicking. He goes off three times in a row. His twin sister is catching the seed in a bottle. It's going to grow. The boy opened his eyes and looked uncertainly at Dimitri, who shook his head in mild reproof. You still think all this happened, Adam?
Ja, hallo lieve luisteraar.
Gulpener. Gulpener bier.
Gulpener. Ah, oké, okay, ja. Want ja, oh, ja, er was een beetje een probleem met het bier, hè?
Het bier stonk verschaald.
Ja, ik heb ook mijn neus er even boven gehouden. Het was, ja, nee.
Niet zo lekker, hè?
Nee.
Maar ja, gulpener bier is in principe gewoon lekker bier.
Dat dus ja, de pils. Ook, dat ja. Vind ik.
Is heel lekker.
Ja, dus dit, bier, maar, ja, ik weet niet. Ja, is iets mis met de installatie?
Ja,
dan,
of het, ja. Ja, er is iets misgegaan met de tappen, het zou ook nog kunnen. te lang
is een
stil.
Raadsel, maar laten we maar een andere tap proberen dan, denk
ja,
ik.
Ja, we gaan voor, we gaan voor de freaking spils.
Ja.
Hey,
ja,
de bar is weg.
Oh, shit. Ja, daar stond hij er nog. Nou, echt. What the fuck? Ja, er stond een bar met freaking spils.
De bar is weg.
En die is gewoon verdwenen.
De bar is
stond
weg.
Hier, nou, echt. Nou.
Ja.
Bizar.
God,
net, ik stop hem nog uit te wijzen.
Ja, zo worden, ergens, zo worden we nooit dronken, Hals.
Hij zal wel ergens naartoe gegaan zijn of zo, ik weet het niet.
Ik ga hem even zoeken.
Ja, ga je even zoeken, dan zie ik je zo weer. Ja, want nou ja, goed, ja, we zijn dus op het Circus Binde Festival. Er was, ja, er was een beetje een probleem met het bier. Het ja, was niet zo lekker. En oh, wacht, empty folder zit zo. Dat kunnen we niet hebben natuurlijk. Circus Band zondag. Speelt een band. We gaan even luisteren naar de muziek. Ze zijn alleen waarschijnlijk bijna klaar. Dus,
zeggen voor de mensen die de LP komen ophalen van de crowdfunding, ik ga hier zijn. Ja? 25. Claro, papi, que pasó? Que pasó? Dank jullie wel. Viva Circus Bende!
Nou, inderdaad, dat was bijna afgelopen. Nou, er wordt flink gedanst. En ja, ik weet nou eigenlijk niet wat we gemist hebben.
You guys prefer this? This? Only this?
Solo.
Yeah.
Solo.
Ah, good.
Yeah, and I don't use this guitar, so I just need what I could.
I'm a jazz guy. I use always this.
I was like all the time the volume was going down and I was like,
Ja, tuurlijk.
We zijn live op Radio Pottenkoek.
Oh, wauw, ja.
Ja, ik was eigenlijk net te laat. Ja, ik kwam bij jullie laatste nummer aan.
Ah, nee. Nou ja.
Ja, voorbereiding kostte toch wat meer tijd dan ingeschat. Ja. Maar,
beter plannen volgende
maar,
keer.
Wat heb ik nou gemist? Want, vertel eens even, want ik vond het wel mooi. Maar,
wat heb je gemist? Ja, moet je misschien de mensen vragen, maar... nou. Wat je gemist hebt is een groep mensen die helemaal vanuit Latijns-Amerika hier zijn gekomen.
Okay.
Om een beetje van de Ecuadoriaanse en Peruaanse muziek te delen.
Ja.
En, maar wel een nieuwe compositie, zeg maar, die ik doe dan.
Ja.
Maar dan wel in die, met die tradities.
Ja.
Wat je hebt gemist is een beetje misschien naar die landschappen te gereisd bent. Heen gereisd hebben. Ja.
Ja, mooi.
Dat misschien.
Ja, ja. Ja. En wat was jullie naam nou?
Iliari.
Iliari,
ja.
Hey, en je zei iets over een crowdfunding of zo en een plaat? Wat,
Ja, ik heb een crowdfunding gedaan jaren geleden.
Oh.
En, maar daar was de pandemie tussen gekomen.
Ach, joh.
En mijn vader die overleed ook in COVID-tijd. Dus er waren een hoop dingen waardoor het allemaal heel erg vertraagd werd. En, ja. En nu heb ik eindelijk de LP's om de mensen...
Ja, de truc met de tijd is geïnverteerd en nu opeens is de plaat hier. En,
dat is
maar,
wel...
Maar die opnames zo, die had je al gemaakt eerst?
Ja, 2022 is het uitgekomen.
Okay.
Dus ik ben 3 jaartjes heb ik tijd gehad. Zoals jou. Neem
ook mijn tijd. Nou ja, dat is wel iets wat toen gebeurd is. Mensen hebben over tijd kunnen nemen.
Ja. Dus dat.
Ja, mooi. En ben je tevreden over de
plaat?
Heb je al leuke reacties gehad van mensen?
Ja, want die plaat die is al 3 jaar online. Hè?
Oh, oké. Okay.
Op digitaal, zeg maar. Ja, ik heb wel goede reacties gehad.
Ja. Ja,
want het is
toch
een plaat
om een echt ding gewoon in je handen te hebben.
Dat ook. En de spelen ook.
Geproduceerd is.
En de muzikanten die daarin spelen zijn echt ook ambassadeurs van die tradities. Dus je hebt echt heel, zeg je dat? Echt heel heavy in de cultuur persoonlijkheden.
Ja. Maar zijn jullie dan nu in Nederland gebaseerd? Of zo?
Nee, we wonen in Ecuador.
Oké. Maar je spreekt wel echt heel bijzonder
Nederlands. Ja, wacht even, ik ben half Nederlands.
Oh.
En ik heb hier 7 jaar gewoond.
Ah, okay.
Naar mijn schooltijd.
Ah, oké. Okay.
Dus zeg maar, toen ik 17 was, kwam ik hier.
Ja.
En ja, en mijn vader heeft ons tweetalig opgevoed ook. Mijn moeder is Peruaans.
Ja. Cool.
Dus ja, ik spreek wel...
Ja, cool.
En ik heb ook met veel van de mensen in dit festival die hier werken, daar heb ik ook heel veel mee, daar ben ik heel veel mee opgeschoten in die tijd. Want ik kraakte ook. En,
Nou ja, dat is wel de waarde van dit soort communities. Is gewoon ook wel behoorlijk.
Zo waardevol, echt waar. Ik ben heel erg geraakt door wat ze hier hebben kunnen in stand houden, want het bestaat al 7 jaar, of 8 jaar.
En hoe ze gewoon de mensen bij elkaar brengen en iets opzetten wat heel veel persoonlijkheid heeft.
Ja. Ja,
wat heel veel identiteit ook heeft.
Ja.
Dat vind ik echt heel mooi. In deze tijden waar dat heel vaak ook niet meer is.
Ja, gewoon verbinding om het verbinden en niet om een of andere reden of zo. Om een getalletje of een dingetje of een liedje
of datje. Ja, precies. En gewoon lekker jezelf zijn.
Ja. Ja. Ken je ook de loop van de hoop?
Nee.
Dat heeft ook weer met corona te maken en ADM. Er was een jongen, Pepijn, die was tijdens corona de weg kwijtgeraakt en overleden hier in het bos.
Oké.
En daar is een enorme, daar is eerst het Pepijnpad uit voortgekomen.
Wanneer was dat?
Tijdens corona.
Oké.
En nu dit jaar is daar de Loop van de Hoop geopend. En, met allemaal kunstwerken die gaan over... Over dood en missen en dat soort dingen. En niet dat ik het over de dood wil hebben, maar wat ik wou zeggen is dat dat een ding is waar het Groene Veld, de ADM-community, gewoon echt ontzettend
veel omhelst.
Echt zo samen met de buurt tot iets komen wat zo mooi is.
En heel inclusief. En wat ik ook heel leuk vind is al die generaties door elkaar hier.
Ja.
Gewoon, want dat is ook heel vaak verdeeld hè, in Europa. Jongeren en kinderen bij kinderen en ouderen in bejaardenhuizen. En hier is het gewoon allemaal gewoon samen. Dat geeft de sfeer ook dat je heel thuis voelt, vind ik.
Ja.
Dus het was daarom ook een heel leuk optreden.
Ja,
we hebben ons heel erg thuis gevoeld.
Ja. Nou, geweldig, dankjewel.
Wat is je naam?
Hans. En wil je nog verder iets kwijt?
Nee, ik heb denk ik veel gesproken al, hè?
Ja. Heel mooi, dankjewel. Ja.
Nee, bedankt. Bedankt.
Nou, succes. even die plaat bekijken hoor nog.
Hilary!
Todas mis sangres.
Hilary!
Van Hilary. En dat is een prachtige plaat. En ook op cd. En, is het good?
Nah.
Are you English?
Yeah, English.
Okay, yeah. Are you selling or are they from the crowdfunding?
Yeah,
they're
from the crowdfunding. Yeah, you are from the crowdfunding.
No, I didn't know.
We are selling,
But you're also like selling more.
Yeah, we are selling. Ah, okay. If you want 25. Maybe in the future.
Thank you very much. I hope you are also one of the...
We are friends from Ecuador.
We
most of the time play. I don't play music, but I play videos with them. I make photos. So.
Friend of the family.
Yeah.
Operator.
Yeah. We are like family also. Music family.
Well, okay, good luck. Thank you very much. Ciao.
See you.
Dat was Iliaga. En was... Ik hoop... ik weet niet. Ik zit te klooien met de volumes. En tijd. Dus ik hoop dat het net ook verstaanbaar was. Kijk eens. De Climax Bar is gelokaliseerd. De bar die net vermist werd. Die is gevonden.
Kom je voor hem ook? Nou, dan heb je hem in de gaten. Dit is de lof, de communiceren. De Jupjes schouw van tafel en die bulkte van de poem. Die arme zo, de mieters, die bleven rondjes doen. Maar toen zijn buurt gekomen was, toen smeerde hij hem snel. Ze Bentley reed hij in de
plek.
Hij brandt nou in de hel. Want is die weg van de communicerende vaten. Dan heb je er een, kun je de andere niet laten. Kom je uit Mokum, nou, dan heb je hem in de gaten. Het is de wet van de communicerende, de wet van de communicerende, de wet van de communicerende vader.
Begraven is niet
goed.
Wacht, ik ga even een biertje bestellen, want dan blijf ik een beetje op niveau.
Deze man die heeft zo'n dorst.
Mag jij bier? Ja, hart als vuurwerk en een antwoord zo koel als de tijd van het jaar. Zomer in de sneeuw. Zo struikelden ze over bloemen en bijen, jij en ik. Toen de bloemen op de markt uit de hemel vielen. Plankgas door de bocht op drie wielen, jij en ik. Heel even. Heel even voor altijd.
Rust door.
Ja, wat fijn dat jij zo zit te spelen.
Ja, dankjewel.
Ja, want ja, die bar die was net... jullie waren net daar en toen draaide ik me om en zei van... Oh, nu ga ik een biertje bestellen. Toen waren jullie weg.
Ja, de bar die rijdt overal heen.
Ja, ja, ja. Ik was heel blij dat ik jullie weer opdook. Want nou
ja. Heb ik een
lekker frikkensbiertje.
Een lekker frikkensbiertje.
Ja.
En ja, het is gewoon eigenlijk nog altijd een echt café gebleven, hè, eigenlijk. En gewoon gewoon gebleven.
Het is gewoon het originele frikkenscafé. Dus.
Ja, ja. Je kijkt, alles verandert en zo, maar ja, goede dingen die blijven. Hè. Bloed kruipt waar het niet gaan.
Dat is wel waar, ja. Een aantal andere plekken die mij diep aan het hart gaan, die zijn ook al heel lang hetzelfde.
Ja.
De stal in Ruigoord bijvoorbeeld.
Ja.
Dat is ook zo'n plek, toch?
Ook zo'n plek. En het duizend jaar hetzelfde. En het duikt altijd weer op.
Ja. Maar de frikkersbar dus ook, die gaat ook al een tijdje mee, denk ik.
Ja, dat gaat zeker een tijdje mee.
We gaan
weer even rijden met de bar.
Oh, nou...
Nou, dan moet ik mijn biertje even vasthouden.
Oh, maar jij zit gewoon vast aan de bar. Je kan gewoon blijven
zitten. Nee, ik moet er vanaf, want de banden zijn hier helemaal weer...
Be prepared.
Tijden veranderen, het goede blijft, maar het slijt wel, hè.
Maar, en zit jij gewoon de hele dag een beetje aan de bar zo te spelen? En,
vandaag ben ik de stamgast met de accordeon.
En dat doe je dat wel vaker zo? Of, Want jij speelt ook in...
Ik speel ook in de beaters. Dan heb ik... Dit is een Frans Doedel solo projectje.
Frans Doedel solo. Ja, we wandelen nu heel langzaam achter de bar.
En let op je biertje. Ik zou hem vasthouden. Ja.
Het is wel een aparte manier om...
Het is heel apart, maar wel gezellig, toch? Als het maar chaotisch is, dan is het goed.
Ja. Maar wat voor repertoire doe je dan nu zo?
Met het solo-projectje. Een beetje zo'n kleinkunstachtige en Nederlands-Engelstalig. Een beetje... smartlappen. Ik noem het altijd liederen over zeelieden en andere onfortuinlijke types.
Ja, geweldig. Ja. Nee, ik vind het hartstikke leuk. En hoe is het met de bitsers dan?
Dat ligt wat? Een beetje op zijn gat. Dus we zijn meer een soort gelegenheidsbeentje geworden. Maar we spelen nog wel.
Oké. Okay.
Maar iedereen heeft allemaal een hele hoop muzikale projecten. Dus het is altijd heel moeilijk om iedereen bij elkaar te krijgen. Maar voor echte mooie dingen, dan komen we nog wel...
Want jullie zijn ook al heel lang bij elkaar, toch? De Beatles?
Een eeuwigheid, ja. Dat heb allemaal metamorfoses gehad. Maar het blijft altijd gaan.
Ja,
net zoals de Frikkersbar.
Ben jij er vanaf het begin bij met de Beatles?
Ja.
En hoe lang is dat geleden dan nog?
Ach, dat is volgens mij ook alweer 25 jaar of zo.
25 jaar?
Ja, ik denk het wel.
Zo.
Hey, die ben het.
Dus sinds het begin van dit millennium zijn jullie al...
Eigenlijk wel, ja.
Ja, wauw. We wandelen nog steeds richting de silo nu.
Ja, we moeten even een hobbeltje nemen. Dat is het gevaarlijk.
Maar heb jij enig idee wat het verplaatsingsbeleid is? Zit daar een lijn in of is dat gewoon...
Het beleid, ja, het ligt eraan waar de show is en hoe de wind waait. En soms gaat er dan weer van alles gebeuren.
Ja. Als het te druk wordt, dan vluchten jullie snel naar een
Het is de bedoeling dat er ook nog een biertje verkocht kan worden. Mensen willen natuurlijk dit bier proeven.
Ja, absoluut ja. Want ik hoorde hele slechte verhalen over de Hertog Jan van de Centrale Bar. Ik heb er ook aan geroken, aan een glas.
Je kunt altijd beter...
Dat was niet goed, hoor.
Ik zeg maar zo, niet dat ik die man van de brouwerij ken, hoor. Maar het is natuurlijk gewoon wel... Het allerbeste bier wat er gewoon op de wereld gebrouwen wordt, hè? Frikkens bier.
Ja, Frikkens.
We zaten er al jaren op te wachten. En toen ineens, alsof hij als een soort god uit de hemel kwam. En bier begon te brouwen in een oud klein zeecontainertje. Ja. En dat is,
maar het is zo fijn dat er eindelijk gewoon dat er eindelijk een biertje is dat wat gewoon van ons was. Maar dat uit het is, onze cultuur komt. En dat is zo bevrijdend.
Dat,
dat je niet meer achter die casino-kapitalistische idioten hoeft aan te rennen. Maar dat je gewoon thuis
gewoon een
thuis
lekker,
op de ADM.
Een lekker pilsje die kaart. Het vliegt een wesp in je microfoon. Ja, nee, dat zijn we wel blij mee natuurlijk. Ja. Ja. Proost,
nou,
trouwens.
Ja, proost.
Ja.
Wat leuk om jou te komen. Ja, en ga je nou ook weer spelen? Of ga je nog even... Oh,
er is nu een show aan de gang natuurlijk. Dus dan doe ik even niet spelen, want anders stoort dat.
Ja, zo hard spelen.
Ja, maar dit stoort wel. Het is natuurlijk een beetje een stille show. Dus,
Is het een MIM-voorstelling?
Ik denk, het staat ook daar niet zo hard. Dus ik denk dat ik even pauze heb.
Ja. Nou, hartstikke goed. Nou, neem even lekker je rust.
Zeker, even een peukje roken. Ja. En,
dan ga ik even door het gordijn sneaken daar. Dat
zou ik even doen, want het klinkt heel interessant. Ja.
Nou, hey, dankjewel.
Graag gedaan. Tot de volgende.
dat was accordeonist zanger van de Beatles. Er staat hier een afgesloten tent waar iets gebeurt. Even kijken of we iets kunnen zien. Ik zie een DJ. Dat is die man met die enorme ring om zich heen. En dat is verder pompende disco. Dus ik denk dat dat niet zo erg boeiend is. Maar we kunnen het wel even proberen. Er is een voorstelling aan de hand met. Een man met een hele grote ring om zich heen en een DJ die daar muziekjes bij maakt. We gaan even kijken in de hoek hier bij het piratenschip. Dit is gemaakt van autobanden of andere banden. Hele grote banden en frontjes van auto's. Er zijn allemaal kinderen aan het spelen en... In de silo zijn mensen ergens mee bezig, maar... So, are you going to the...
Yeah, show, like I got the bandje.
Yeah. It must be a really special thing, because... do you know what's going to happen?
Not really.
Did you speak anyone...
I had a really great show that they make. This group, Los Galianto.
Los Galindos. Yeah.
Yes.
I've heard very enthusiastic stories, and it seems like you're going to move around.
Okay.
And there was an explosion last night also somewhere, and I'm really curious what it was. So.
Explosion.
Yeah.
Is it safe to join this?
I don't know. I didn't hear any scary stories.
Or someone lost their hand?
I don't know. I spoke a few people who had been there, and they didn't say it was dangerous. So.
Okay. So the explosion
that there was a lot of death.
Oh, death. Mm.
So, but
I hope
it was
it's not
funny.
About me. Funny, okay. Yeah,
so,
I'm curious. Yeah.
No, I'm looking forward to your report. Do you know when you can come back to report on the radio?
Yeah, sure. I will.
One hour?
It's going to take 1 hour to 1.5 hour. Are you not coming in?
No, it was sold out.
Okay.
I arrived, and then first I sat down and had a coffee and a cigarette, and then I tried to get a ticket, but then it was just sold out. So if I would have gone for the ticket straight away, I would have been able to come.
Okay. So you were too late. When I was alive here, it was still ticket left. So.
Yeah, lucky you.
Yes.
And anything else you saw?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah.
But tell me about last night, because there was a noise picnic, and it was also kind of a celebration of some kind.
You
went there?
Yeah, I went there, yeah.
And what happened? Can you tell?
Yeah, we brought the Jenny generator and the speaker and mixer, and everybody started making noise.
Okay. Where was it?
In the Spanbauder.
In the park.
Yeah, in Spanbauder. And even Hunter, I think, came by, but they just saw what we are doing and then left. So no any alarm or anything.
No,
like, no one didn't bother us.
They didn't offer any mental help.
No, nothing. But so it went really wild, I guess.
Oh yeah, really.
Yeah.
And many people there, many artists.
A couple, but Mike and Lona and Nick, Leonard also came by, and Dimitri also. Yeah, Dimitri from Utrecht.
Okay, from Utrecht. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but I was.
And they all brought their gear and.
And I just played in the forest.
Oh,
and nobody didn't bring light. So it was completely
was no
dark.
Yeah, because I saw this movie coming by and I saw three tiny red lights. It was probably the.
Indicator for the power or just phone or so there were no absolute lights there. Okay. So
Are there any recordings? Think, or?
Maybe I didn't make a recordings. Lorna was also very busy, so I don't think she made it. Nick is new for this, so I don't think anyone.
And Nick was playing also?
Yeah, he was playing.
Ah,
yeah.
That's a good development. Yeah. What did he do?
He was doing basically.
Electronics? Or
with amp all the time. I don't know what he was doing, but he was just.
Making noise. Come on, it was a noise picnic, right?
So
what else do you do on a noise picnic? You make noise.
So all the time.
Okay.
So.
And you seem pretty healthy now, so it must have done you good to experience a noise picnic, because you were a bit sloppy.
Yeah, I think I had a COVID last couple of days.
COVID. Okay.
Yeah, but I think I recovered from it. I lost my taste.
A little bit of noise picnic is good for recovery, I think.
Yeah, it was good to go out and enjoy the night. But I started getting a bit sleepy at some point, so I needed to leave earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, and now you're already here again.
Yes, yes.
Almost seems like